Making Chicken Salad this week is brought to you by Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy. Are you in Brisbane and thought about learning to be a wrestler? Well, here's your chance. Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy are based out of Beenleigh in Queensland, and they're committed to teaching the best, safest way to learn the art of professional wrestling. Hit up their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or email admin@threecountfitness.com now to register your interest, and we thank them so much for supporting the show.
Here I was blaming AEW for feeding you chicken shit, knowing you mindless millennials would be eating it up as if it were chicken salad, when it's really been your fault all along.
Make chicken salad out of chicken shit. People is as people does, that's all there is to it. Put a square peg in a round hole, just never seems to fit. And you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Welcome to Making Chicken Salad, the Wrestle Radio Australia show, where we talk about everything that's going on in the world of international wrestling. I am the new Bearcat gimmick, Lachlan Albert, and I am joined by the debut loss to Jeff Hardy, Todd Eastman. Todd, how you doing, mate?
Oh, geez, we're getting the future endeavored, are we?
Oh, yeah, straight out of the gate. So,
what a quick week.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's quick fortnight. See, normally we only get to talk, you know, once every 2 weeks, but when there's huge news, we've done it once before and we're doing it again. When there's a massive, massive week of wrestling news, we get on here, we throw down another episode, and that's what we're doing right now. So let's talk about the big cuts that have gone over on at WWE. So there was a quarterly investors call that wrapped up, and shortly after there was some cuts to their roster citing budget cuts. Let's go through the names. From the main roster, we've got Keith Lee, Mia Yim, Nia Jax, Karrion Kross, Eva Marie, Lindsay Dorado, Grand Metalik, Harry Smith, and B-Fab, as well as from the NXT roster, we've got Scarlett, Ember Moon, Frankie Monet, Jesse Kamea, Katrina Cortez, Jeet Rama, Oni Lorcan, Trey Baxter, Zeta Ramea, all let go in one fell swoop. Some of the cuts were reportedly made due to refusal of talent to be vaccinated and not being big enough stars to get away with it. So there's rumors that at least five of the eight, but maybe more, were due to refusal to vaccinate.
Yeah.
Of the 18, yes. Out of 18 released, five apparently due to refusal to vaccinate, potentially more. There's established names that would get regular deals, but WWE's discussing new 60-day trial contracts when signing talent. That's per the Wrestling Observer. They don't want people in NXT for years anymore, is what's being said by Brian Alvarez on the Brian and Vinny show. It's going to be 6 months where they can evaluate, and if they're not getting better, they're out. The Observer says virtually all the veteran wrestlers not being used on television were under consideration to be released this week. WWE, concerned about the age of the roster, isn't interested in hiring any women over 25 years old. B-Fab was listed as NXT talent in Laurinaitis' emails, despite being on SmackDown as per the draft last month. Also, she was believed to have just signed a new deal last week. So that's a bit of a confusing one on that release. There's more to go through, but let's just straight off the dome. What's your initial reaction to this, Todd?
Shocked but not shocked, if that makes any sense. I'm not shocked that a lot of these names that I saw got cut, I was like, I didn't really know them anyway. Like, I've seen Jesse Kamea once. Katrina Cortez, if I'm not wrong, is, what's her name? She used to be in NXT back in the original NXT with Bateman when it was, what's his name, Bateman? She was also in Lucha Underground.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think that's who you're thinking of. I think it's someone
different. It isn't? Oh, okay, that's, there you go.
No, that's the ring name Katrina was used in Lucha Underground, not her.
That's where I'm confused. Okay, well, there you go. So there you go. Oni Lorcan, he'd been around for a fair while. He'd had the tag team, that group with Pete Dunne and the big fella, but they're sort of split now because the big fella's now up in the main roster. Hasn't debuted yet, but he's on the main roster now. Trey Baxter, they just dropped their title last week. Is that the guy I'm thinking of? One of the tag team, or is that different?
No, I think he's an individual.
Okay, well, there you go.
Once again, there's so many of these like guys who we've seen so little of, we're not 100% sure who we're talking about at any given time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'm just going to go through like the main roster guys that got cut. Keith Lee shouldn't have got cut. Amir Yim shouldn't have got cut. Nia Jax, fine with that. Karrion Kross shouldn't have got cut, but should have been used properly. Eva Marie shouldn't have been signed in the first place. Lindsay Dorado, Grand Metalik, they've had their run. That it obviously didn't work out for them. It's sad, but it's that happens. Harry Smith was signed, but I didn't actually even know he was properly signed.
No, he'd only been back for a tiny amount of time. He was back, then he was out with injury, and then he was out.
Yeah, he'd done a dark match. B-Fab is confusing because you thought they would have actually given him a bit of a chance in the actual main roster. I don't know if that's one of the vaccination things or not. I'm not sure. But, like, I know there's this anti-vax facts argument sort of thing. But for the WWE at the moment, I think it's more of a, like, if you aren't vaccinated, you can't do overseas tours. So that's...
On top of that, if you think about, will they put someone who's not vaccinated on a card with Roman Reigns, who is known to be immunocompromised and is the biggest star in the company right now? Mm. If you want to look at this from a Vince McMahon perspective, your hottest property is Roman Reigns. He is immunocompromised. He needs to be safe at work. And we know that there's other people who are kicking up a stink about WWE having COVID measures in place, names like Kevin Owens, who are seen as big draws for the company, who want to make sure that they're safe. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that there is a lot of reasons to, if someone's not going to get vaccinated, if that can be company policy and you're out the door if you're not going to. Yeah. I think that seems to be, for a couple of the names, that jumps out at me. For example, Nia Jax was someone that I thought was a WWE lifer no matter what. If Nia had survived the things that she had survived, and I'm on record as saying I think a lot of the issues with Nia were WWE's fault. I think she was undertrained and overutilized. But at the same time, I think that, you know, she was ready to be a WWE person forever. And I think if it wasn't for the vaccination side of it, I think she would still be there.
Well, let's face it. Like, I know she's been facing, like, she made a statement that she'd been having mental issues. That's why she'd taken the break that she'd taken. And she'd asked for another, like, because they'd given her a booking sheet for when she was coming back. And then she'd asked for another more time to do it. And then she said that's when she got they didn't get any word back. And then she got her release. But really, I mean, she's not good. She's long as she's been there, she hasn't improved. And every time I see her, she's either like hurting people that she's working with, or she's hurting herself.
So, and it's like, what do you do on top of that? Like, as much as, you know, I've said I think she's undertrained. I think that's a big part of the reason that people are getting hurt. But at the end of the day. She's not someone who people are tuning in for, at least I don't think. I don't think that she's pulling viewers. I don't think that, and the spot that she's in, they've got plenty of fantastic women that could fill that spot. You know, even if you think back to in the last set of releases we had, or, you know, before that in last year's releases, I think, was someone like Jazzy Gabbett, who would fit that spot much better, is a fantastic worker. Everything she's doing as alpha female is fantastic. And yet, you know, they had Nia stick around. I think that it was probably, I honestly think it was the connection to The Rock is the only reason that the company was high on her, you know, but it is what it is. I think that I said to a mate, look, it sucks for someone to get fired while they're on mental health leave, but honestly, for Nia, maybe it should have happened 3 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. But like, if I look over this whole list, the guys that I think are done wrong by getting let go, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, of course. And that, to me,
obvious I'm ones. Looking at
this list, yeah, I'm not really seeing any, because, I mean, really, what's the ceiling on an Oney Lorcan? They're
yeah. Like, and, like, I loved Oney Lorcan's work, but he's not drawing people to the product.
They missed out a lot on the girls, though. Like Mia Yim.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Mia Yim, Amber Moon, Frankie Monet. They're three girls.
Frankie Monet is an absolutely wild release to me. So Taya Valkyrie, one of the most decorated women's competitors in the world today, has done great work basically everywhere, is one of the most experienced women's wrestlers in the world. If you know, if you're looking through the eyes of WWE, she's a blonde with big cans who can go. So wow. But this is what I'm saying is, like, where's the downside? What's the reason for releasing? You know, it's not like she's got a husband who's off working somewhere else, because her husband's working on the main roster.
Well, I was going to say, he had to be very worried when Keith Lee and Mia Yim both got released. Then Karrion Kross and Scarlett both got released. When she got the phone call, John must have turned his phone off.
Mundo must have been having it.
I'm going, just in case.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Frankie Monet's release is really, I don't understand it at all. Because for me, if you're not having her wrestle, she seems like a perfect trainer in that NXT system. Because if you want to talk about someone who's got heaps of experience, can work, knows how to play to a camera, can teach younger women how to go, can get in and physically do it with them to show them how to do it. I don't get it. I don't get that release at all.
Look, and I'm just going to put this out there, because I know everyone's piling on the WWE for all these budget cuts and all, because they shouldn't be budget cuts for all of this sort of thing. And I'm going to come at it from a business perspective. And I know they just announced they had a massive, like, a profit for this quarter.
Yeah, let's give those exact numbers. So WWE reported third quarter revenues were up 15% to $255.8 million year over year. That's one of several key kind of figures that they announced. Okay. So on top of that, SummerSlam viewership was up 55% from 2020. So they're doing well.
Yeah. So they made this amount of money, right? So then you've got all the wrestling observers and all that, just, and your Brian Sapp, your Sean Ross Sapps, and that going, can you believe the WWE cut all these guys for budget cuts during a time when they're making record profits? Yes, I can. Because at the end of the day, it's a business. And if these people are surplus to what they need, they don't need them. So they cut them, which then also boosts their bottom line. It's a shitty thing. Like, it's a shitty thing to do, to have to cut these people, but they were carrying way too many people to start with. I think I said this last time. They were already carrying a shitload of people. And for the longest time, all we've heard about, like, people criticizing WWE is, oh, their roster is so old. This is the average age of the people that are in the blah, blah, blah. Now they're going younger. They're going, what are you doing? Why are you cutting all these people that are over a certain age? Why are you doing this? Blah, blah. So where do they win on this? Yeah. I see all these roster cuts, and I understand three quarters of them, like, except for, honestly, the girls and
Keith and Karrion.
Keith and Karrion, they're the only two that I would have kept out of that whole lot. I'm sorry, I just would. They're just excess.
If you think of WWE as any other company, right? Imagine that you're running a warehouse and you've hired a bunch of people to move shit around your warehouse, and you've got to pay all of them because they're on contract. And there's a dozen people that you say every day, yeah, we don't need you to come in today, but you're still paying them. Would you keep them on?
No. And that's the thing too. It's. I honestly think they went on this big signing spree because they were really worried about what AEW was going to do. And now they've seen for over 2 years what they're doing. And I think it almost, and I don't want to say it, but I'll say it because I'll get in trouble and it's getting controversy and all that shit. They've almost hit their cap.
Creates cash.
They've almost hit their cap of what it looks like anyway, of what they can do. Because if you're bringing in guys like Punk, Brian, and it's not overly boosting their ratings, which it isn't. I mean, you've got to look at it. It's not boosting their ratings. You can say that we're getting closer to WWE. So no, WWE coming down closer to you. It's not that you're exactly meeting them. It's that they're coming down to you at this point. So the WWE is seeing that and going, why have I got all these people on roster when we don't need them? We don't.
If you're the WWE, let's look at a guy like Keith Lee, who obviously is an absolutely fantastic talent. But if Daniel Bryan and CM Punk don't already have you watching AEW, is Keith Lee going to get you to turn over?
That's a good point.
If Danielson and Punk aren't enough for you, I don't think Lee is going to be the straw that broke the camel's back.
No. It's just, if you think about it, if Kyle O'Reilly and Owens don't re-sign, Kevin Steen don't re-sign, and they go to AEW, it's just ROH
2.0.
Yeah, that's what it would be when you think about it. Oh, yeah, and also there was this, I don't have a story in here, but Kyle O'Reilly and Johnny Gargano are doing dark matches this week on SmackDown, I think. So I think they're getting looked at to actually move up to the main roster. Whether or not it happens is a whole thing.
But there's, you know, and this is one of those things where if we think back, you know, we've had Gargano and Ciampa worked on a WrestleMania, right? So WWE's in a place at the moment where when they look at NXT and the talent that's there, I think it's really interesting to assess what they want out of that talent. If you've got someone like Gargano, I think he fits really well on the main roster and has previously, but then I also think he's a guy who's super experienced and can get great work out of younger guys. I think that's the reason that Ciampa is the champion. I think they want to be able to put Ciampa up against guys like Bron Breakker and go show him how to have a great TV match. So It'll be interesting to see what happens with Gargano and Kyle O'Reilly, because they are two guys who can teach young people how to have great matches or fit on the main roster perfectly. It feels like they're really versatile and can go either way.
Well, especially now that they're doing, if they are going to do it, this whole new 60-day trial contract, because they don't want people in NXT for years. Every 6 months is going to be like a whole boost of people to go up, and the ones that they're not ready to go up will pretty much get like shown the door. That to me tells me that that's exactly now NXT is completely developmental, and that is it.
Yep.
If they're going to recycle guys every 6 months or cycle people out every 6 months or even every 2 months by 60-day trials, then... Yeah, I don't know. There can't be that much cohesion with booking when it comes to that sort of stuff, because you've got guys for 60 days, unless you sign them on for longer.
And I think that's going to be the question of, you know, for the people who are putting together NXT, are you going to put someone in a big title match if in 60 days they might be gone? Mm-hmm. Like, that really becomes a question. But then I'm also questioning, if this is the plan they're going with, can you see someone improve in that 60 days, in that 6 months? Are you getting the chance if the creative team knows that, oh, we don't have this guy super long, let's not put him in a title program? Are you then seeing what that person can put out? It's tough.
But that also, to me, that also to me is, you remember how they said there was the one, this was like a month ago or something, they said they weren't going to be looking on the indies anymore for people, they were going to be looking for wrestlers outside of, that tells me that they're not going to be doing that at all. Because if you're bringing people in on 60-day contracts, they're people that already know how to wrestle.
Yeah, you're not teaching someone from scratch in 60 days.
No way. So that's another thing. But yeah, we'll move on for that. But I'll sum it up like this. It's a terrible thing that all these people have lost their jobs, especially nowadays when there isn't an ROH to go to now. On the other hand, like, I can see it from the company's point of view. I really can. I know it sounds harsh in me, but like, it doesn't matter that they're making like hand over fist monies, give me all the monies. It doesn't matter about that, because
they're a multinational company.
Yeah. And they're seeing all these guys that are basically sitting at home, not working, and we're paying the people to do that. So I would look at that myself. If I came into a company and saw that, I was like, why have we got all these people? When who do we use? And then why aren't we just paying them?
Yep.
And exactly. They go, oh, because what happens if someone gets injured? We bring someone in. That's when you sign someone.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just me.
All right. Moving on from there, we've got a couple more points that came up with the investors meeting that are just, you know, worth talking about. Khan said they're happy with the NXT relaunch. Several call-ups have already happened. The recruiting effort led by Trips and Pritchard is focused on young athletes. So I think, you know, there's your Bron Breakers of the world.
Yeah. Mind you, the ratings this past week for NXT were in the toilet. They were terrible.
Yeah, but genuinely, I don't think they care about ratings anymore.
That's the thing.
If they cared about ratings, they would not be calling people up. They would be having those, you know, top tier guys on NXT. If they cared about ratings, they wouldn't be putting on Bron Breakker versus Gargano for the title. They'd be putting on any, you know, any number of those. They'd just do, you know, another match with Gargano, or they'd do another match with Kyle O'Reilly, because you know that those guys can put on a great match and draw.
Yeah.
It's not about ratings anymore. It's developmental. Another thing we learned is part of the selection of the Royal Rumble date. So this is what we talked about last episode, where a lot of those dates are on Saturdays. We've heard that the Royal Rumble date, for example, was to not go up against the Winter Olympics and their partners in NBC Universal. Obviously, now that they're on Peacock, they're competing with everything that NBC does. So if NBC's got some big thing that they want to put on, they would rather move the WWE event. So yeah, there's a lot of Saturdays. We talked about how we're happy with the Saturdays. Seems like that decision may have just been made for the WWE. Another thing that we've heard, this one's not from the investors call, this is actually from the Pat McAfee show, is that Michael Cole's dealing with 65% hearing loss. There's special earpieces underneath Michael Cole's headsets on air so that he can hear. McAfee commended his broadcast partner, says, "I'm like, man, I appreciate your commitment to the entertainment, because that's 100% of you having a headset on for 25 years.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely right. And we know that, you know, we've heard about in those headsets, we've got Vince yelling out what to do. We've got what's going on. We've got a run sheet to follow. So there's been a lot of people say they hate Cole's commentary. I've been one of them at times. But for me, the bit that I always remember about Michael Cole is, if you go back years now, would have been about 2013, the Beast in the East special, where Michael Cole was there doing commentary when Vince McMahon was not there telling him what to do. And it was honestly some of the best wrestling commentary I've ever heard.
That, and also the NXT UK tournament. He wasn't there for that either. And Cole did the commentary on that with Nigel. And it was really good as well. It's 100% like getting overproduced.
Yep. I think that Michael Cole, while I don't love everything that he calls, he's doing his job exactly as it's meant to be done. And, you know, it is not great to hear that he's got that hearing loss. It's amazing to hear that he is pushing through with that job through that. And I also, and again, like, here's my little lefty corner, but, you know, that's great disability representation. If someone can be working through an acquired disability with that kind of technological assistance, that's an assistive device that is helping him do his job as normal, I think that's great representation too. And that's something that we don't get a lot of in things like wrestling.
Yeah. Also, to go to what you said before about, like, getting, we said before about getting overproduced and all that, I saw a YouTube clip that was leaked. I think it was this week even. And you can hear Michael Cole asking Vince, he goes, do I have to keep saying, like, I feel like I've said this like five times already. Do I have to keep saying, like, is basically what he says is like, and then, you know, because you don't hear what Vince says. And she's like, yes, sir. Yep, I can do that, sir. That's fine. Because at the end of the day, Vince is the boss. But don't, that's exactly, like, right. I don't think he's not aware that it's boss time and all of this sort of stuff might annoy people. He knows, but he's getting told.
And you can go back and you can read things that people have said who've been in that commentary team. People like Paul Heyman or Mick Foley have said that they could not do it because Vince just would not shut up and would yell at them to say specific things that they did not think sounded good. But you got to do what Vince says. So, you know, that's what that is. Big kudos to Michael Cole for working through that, and puts in perspective, you know, how much work he does do.
Yeah, and not only that, like, the last year or so he's been with Pat McAfee on SmackDown, they've been great. They've been one of my favorite commentary teams to listen to.
Because McAfee's got so much energy, and
I think he loosens Cole up a little bit.
Yeah.
Where, like, Cole can't help himself but laugh at some of the stuff he does. So it sort of relaxes him. So he goes into that more of an easy sort of partnership between the two, it's one of my favorite things. Like, this week, Rampage was one of my favorite ones to listen to because Jericho wasn't on there. When Jericho's not there, it's a great show commentary-wise to listen to. I think the reason why I haven't liked a lot of the Rampages is because he's there yelling for like 50 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's also point out, you know, big props to McAfee. The guy hasn't been doing it very long and is doing an excellent job.
I mean, look at the dude. He comes in, hasn't been doing this, wrestles, does an unbelievable job in AEW, in NXT, goes to the main roster to do commentary and knocks that shit out of the park as well. Could you imagine if he didn't decided back in the day that he didn't want to be a gridiron, like a kicker, and just wanted to be a wrestler? He could have had the world on his in a string, really, when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. He could have been in that GOAT conversation, you know? Anyway, we'll move on. So let's talk about AEW. I am just going to read a tweet from Tony Khan verbatim. John Moxley has allowed me to share with you that he is entering an inpatient alcohol treatment program. John is a beloved member of the AEW family. We all stand with him and Renee and all of his family and friends as he shifts his focus to recovery. Obviously, you know, a bit of a somber story here. Moxley is, you know, we've talked about how sometimes he's up and down, but he really is, if you look at the past decade of professional wrestling, one of the biggest names that has appeared in that space of time, has been a main eventer in WWE and AEW. Really glad to hear that he is, you know, taking care of himself, because addiction is, it's physical and it's mental. So let's really hope that Mox gets through this and comes out the other side better than ever. Anything you've got to say about that one, Todd?
I'm just glad that if he saw that he had a problem, that he realized it and went to get help, because it's not just him. It's his daughter now. It's his wife. It affects everybody around him. Obviously, it must have been affecting them to the point where maybe they've said something to him, like, you need to go and get some help. And I'm just glad that he's been receptive to that, because a lot of people aren't. A lot of people live in denial and then not go and seek the help they need, whether it be alcoholism, whether it be drug dependency, whether it's depression and anxiety and just not accepting that. The first key, like they always, like the whole saying is that the first key of like fixing a problem is admitting you have one. And now that he's done that, hopefully this will be something that's best for him for the long run.
And it goes to show that there's no weakness in seeking out help. If someone is as big of a bona fide badass as John Moxley is going to get help, anyone can go and get help. So with that happening, Mox is obviously off of AEW television at the moment. I know it's not on our run sheet, but let's talk about what happened with a replacement for him as part of the AEW World Title Eliminator Tournament. The match was originally scheduled to be John Moxley versus Orange Cassidy, with Moxley unable to be on the show. He was replaced by Miro, who won the match. So we are getting the final of that match on Full Gear, Danielson versus Miro. Now, this is one that I wanted to bring up because obviously it's going to get said. This is a match that I don't even remember whether or not it happened in WWE. It probably happened a dozen times in the mid-card and I've forgotten about it. In AEW, is this a much bigger deal?
Honestly, but do you know what I didn't like though? And this is, I was going to be my, I'll save it for my chicken shit. So no, I won't say it. So, but,
okay.
Yeah. The whole, like, I look at it and I go, yeah, okay. You could have had it where you could have had a younger guy come through and elevate the younger guy, but you haven't. Now, I understand that you want to keep like Miro strong, but let's face it, he's probably going to lose to Brian anyway. I mean, if Brian does lose, then it's Miro and Hangman going forward, which can be a fair enough thing. But I mean, is that really a main event title program that you could see?
So I actually think I've got an idea of why it ended up being Miro, and we'll talk about it very, you know what, let's jump to this now. Let's talk about the card for Full Gear. I'm going to list off the card for Full Gear, and then I'll come back and tell you why I have the thought that Miro was in that spot. So for the AEW World Championship, we've got Kenny Omega versus Hangman Page. For the Women's World Championship, we've got Britt Baker versus Tay Conti. As the final of the Eliminator Tournament, we've got Bryan Danielson versus Miro. For the World Tag Team Championship. We've got Lucha Brothers defending against FTR. We've got a singles match, CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston. Another singles match is Darby Allin versus MJF. We've got a 10-person in Minneapolis street fight, which is Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, Jake Hager, Santana, and Ortiz versus Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, Junior Dos Santos, Andre Arlovsky, and Dan Lambert. And a Falls Count Anywhere six-man match with Jurassic Express and Christian versus the Super Click. Now, this is just the matches that have been confirmed so far, and there's a lot of them, and a lot of them are not singles matches. There is a lot of talent on that card. So if you think to yourself, who would you sub in for Moxley, and you go, well, Adam Cole, oh, he's in that Falls Count Anywhere match. Well, what about Jungle Boy? He's also in the Falls Count Anywhere match. You can slot Sammy Guevara. No, he's in the street fight. Oh, well, what about MJ? No, he's already in that match. You know, it feels like they've got such a huge card that basically everyone who you could sub into that spot is already wrestling on the card.
And it kind of had to be a heel as well, going
exactly
up against
Orange Cassidy, against Bryan Danielson. You can't have a good guy splitting the crowd on that. So even if it was, you know, like someone like Jungle Boy, you don't want the face versus face Danielson versus Jungle Boy, because you want the fans behind Danielson. You don't want the fans split down the middle, especially with Danielson being relatively new to the company still, clearly still being someone that they're pushing towards a title picture after the no contest against Kenny Omega. Yeah, I think that Miro really is the next person on the list after you take out everyone who's already on the card.
Yeah.
All right. Let's really quickly touch on viewership. AW Dynamite averaged 878,000 viewers on TNT, which is down 6.7% from last week. Lowest viewership for the show in its regular time slot since July 7th. That was the first week since the promotion's return to live touring. So continuing to drop. Won't be surprised if we see another drop on Dynamite coming up. As we get closer to Christmas, more people are out doing stuff, out shopping, out, you know, having dinners with families. I think we're going to continue to see it drop. It's not a good forecast. Despite the fact that there was no major sports competition. World Series ended on Tuesday. Two NBN games on ESPN last night did a little better than they'd been doing, 1.75 million and 1.3 million viewers respectively, but doesn't seem to be a huge pull from Dynamite. So I think that the viewership is dropping. For me, I've said it a lot. I think that a lot of the people who really care about AEW, the people who are going to see the Danielsons and the Punks of the world, are watching it online. And that's not going to work for a company that is, you know, based on a TV deal.
As long as they keep up their demo, I think they'll be okay, like contract wise. And I know Nick Khan keeps talking about, they say that the rights, sports rights and that are still going up. So who knows what will happen with it.
We'll see.
I don't care what they say, they have to be concerned about it, surely, because you're not
absolutely
growing, and that's what you should, even if it's an incremental growth, that's what you should be looking for. You don't need big jumps of things, because that's not sustainable, and I think they've proven that over the last year or so with all these debuts and all of that. These big jumps, they're just not sustainable, because they're not a big jump to stay. And then another big jump to stay. It's always like a big jump, then back down, then a big jump, then back down. And it's, yeah, I think, I mean, for me at the moment, the biggest feud happening in AEW is between Tony Khan and Eric Bischoff.
Yep. No, absolutely. And yeah, like there's only a couple of other things that I think we should mention on that Full Gear card. One of them is that we got totally worked with who would be in that Minneapolis street fight. You know, Junior Dos Santos, Arlovsky and Dan Lambert being the three non-Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page members of America's Top Team entering. Not what we picked, but I'm not particularly interested in the match either way. So
it's a lot of green. I look at that, and that's a lot of green on that other side. I mean, you've got the inner circle, which is all like Sammy's young, but he's still a veteran of sorts. And basically, we've got your Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page having to hold up that other. And I know they're going to disguise it by, because it's a street fight, it'll just be shit flying everywhere.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to disguise a lot of it. But still, that is a lot of green in that card. They probably would have been better to do a straight up, like either a Survivor Series style match, like 10 out of 10, and have Page in the match than have what they're doing now. But, you know, not our call. Not our.
That's exactly right. But if you have some comments that you want to make about that, hit up our social media. Let us know. You can go over to WrestleRadio AU on Instagram or Twitter, or WrestleRadio Australia on Facebook. Leave us some comments, leave us some posts, and tell us what you think about that Minneapolis Street Fight match. Coming up next, we've got a whole lot more to talk about around the world of wrestling, as well as That's Debatable, some listener questions, and of course our chicken salad and chicken shit. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is the Bro Day Pod.
Apparently, he had two stipulations. One, it was an all or nothing in terms of accepting it. Either all of them accept it or none of them accept it.
Oh, dude.
So if there's anyone, like, so he told them all, look, you either all have to accept it or you all don't accept it. So if there's someone like, no, I don't want it. You then, if you're one of the 14 that's like, no, it's okay. You don't have to. You're my friend. Don't buy this for me. Don't give me $1 million. But then you look at the other 30 and you're like, well, I can't do it to them. So, okay, I'll accept. It ran along those lines, right?
Imagine that
big
one
power play.
Imagine if there's one dude that's like,
nah,
guys, we can't do it to George.
I know,
we
right?
Love George. Take these,
right?
I would be like, I will punch you. I will slaughter you now.
I don't care. I will kill you. Right? You don't want the million? Fine. I'll have dead two. Set.
He's about to have. Yeah, he's about to have 13 friends. Like, I swear to God.
Follow Bro Day No Plan B podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, or anywhere you get your podcasts. December 3rd, Max Watts. PWA returns home. Now we conquer live, December 3rd, live on Fight.
Welcome back. There is plenty more to talk about in the wide, wide world of wrestling. So let's start with what's happening over in New Japan. Robbie Eagles, Aussie favorite, dropped the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title at Power Struggle to new champ El Desperado. Now, you and I were talking a bit earlier, Todd. We felt like this might happen now that he has the Junior Heavyweight Tag Championships with Tiger Mask. But obviously disappointing to see Robbie Eagles lose a belt ever. Because like we said last pod, super nice guy, really talented worker. Was really good to see him hold the double belts.
How long did he have the belt for? A couple of months now?
A couple of months.
So, I mean, it's a decent-ish run. He went through a lot of matches. He defended the title a few times.
He sure did.
It's not like a transitional thing, so that's good. Like, the worst I would hate is for him to win it, then lose it back, like, a show later.
Immediately, yeah.
So, it was good that they let him have a little bit of a run with it. And I'm sure it's probably
to be
not
double
the last
champ,
time.
So.
Exactly. And it might not be the last time he does it, so. Fingers crossed.
Exactly. Also on that show, we had Kenta beating Tanahashi for the IWGP US title. Kenta has just been doing some fantastic work. My favorite thing about Kenta in his role at the moment is the interviews he is doing after shows. He did an amazing interview where he asked who was going to be subtitling it and then said a whole bunch of nonsense to make it difficult for them to subtitle, which that's great, but also having banger matches with Tanahashi being the new US champ. Really good, really impressive.
He
reminding me of the old Kenta.
he has been doing those types of interviews for the longest time. There was a while there, if you watched all of them, he started to form a relationship with the guy that was
with the camera person. Yeah.
And then the camera person changed and he got angry. And then the other guy came back and he was angry at him for leaving. And so half of his promo would be like, oh, you've come back now. Now you just expect me to be friends with you again.
So good. Great work, Kent. And Tanahashi does not need a title.
If he's got the IWGP US title, hopefully that means he goes to, I think he lives in America, where he's got a residency in Florida. So he could be on a US card, and he's been wanting that match with Punk for the longest time.
Oh, yeah. Trying to claim the GTS back. I would love to see it.
That would be nice to see. And I think Kent is smart enough, or if New Japan are smart enough, they'd say we want it on our show, not bloody AEW.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, 100%.
Fingers crossed for that one.
And it would not surprise me if CM Punk wanted to work a New Japan show if that was on the table.
Yeah, so, even if it's an American show of New Japan.
Speaking of American New Japan shows, Okada has announced a match in San Jose's Battle in the Valley against Buddy Matthews. And man, that should be a banger.
That's great news for Buddy. That's great news for Buddy, because when they said that they did that little vignette that he was coming to New Japan, we weren't sure who he was going to be working. For all we knew, he was just going to come in to work like a young boy or a Carl Fredericks or someone of that sort of ilk. But to be getting Okada in America on a pay-per-view of that sort of thing, that's a great platform for him to start. Hopefully, if anything, people will see how really good a worker Buddy is. And this just launches him even further.
Yeah, we can only hope. Regardless of anything else, let's just really hope that we can see what both of those guys can do. We've seen Okada work those 6-star, 7-star classics. And, you know, you and I know that Buddy's got the ability to go at that level. So let's hope that we get to see an absolute classic there. Moving to some more somber news, we've got someone officially announcing that they won't be wrestling anymore, and that is the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal Sabu. Of course, a staple of the old ECW, working through a whole lot of really crazy spots, a very storied history there. Obviously, sad to see anyone retire, but when it's someone like Sabu, there has to come a time where you can only do so much, and that man has done a lot.
Look, I'm putting it out there, and I don't know if this is a fact or not, but I know not too long ago he lost his wife, girlfriend, partner, Jeannie, Super Jeannie. And so she would accompany him to all of his matches, be his valet and all of that thing. I would not be surprised if this has something to do with that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing that I think, that he was in Australia not that long ago with Super Jeannie, you know, and he is not a spring chicken, but you've got to imagine that when you
put a lot of miles on his body.
Oh, yeah. When you lose someone who is your life partner and is also, you know, really integral to what you do in wrestling, it can't feel the same to wrestle anymore. So, you know, thoughts go out to Sabu. Congratulations on a wonderful career.
Yeah, amazing career. Match with him and Taz, guilty as charged. Unbelievable. Barely Legal. Yes, Barely Legal, the first pay-per-view. Unbelievable match. Had so much good stuff. Good stuff with Rob Van Dam as a tag team partner. Took on I can't remember how to say his last name. Him and Hayabusa on one of the pay-per-views with him and RVD as a tag team. Great stuff. All of that old stuff with ECW, I urge you to go and check out, because that stuff with him and Rob as a tag team, him and Rob feuding, him and Taz feuding, everything to do with that sort of era with Sabu was great. It just legit looked like an uncontrollable animal when he was out there.
Oh, as far as like guys who would just do crazy stuff because they knew it would look good, I remember him climbing up on the big E letter when they had the big ECW sign, climbing up on the E, barely being able to stand on it, you know, because he knew it would make for a great visual.
Well, he did it at Raw and nearly killed himself.
Yep, that's right.
Because it moved when he jumped.
And that's the kind of guy that he was in the ring. So a great body of work there. If you haven't gone back and watched those old, horrible, dirty ECW shows, there's some bits that aren't great. There's some bits that aren't great, but the Sabu was always, always entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that used that would incorporate a chair into their offense without actually using it on an opponent as much as or in the way that Sabu used to do.
No, everyone else would just hit someone with chairs and Sabu would use a chair. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to another story that is a little bit disappointing. We talked last week about the mass release of Ring of Honor, and a very prominent Ring of Honor talent immediately went out and suffered a big old injury. Danhausen, very nice, very evil, love that Danhausen, injured himself, got a broken leg, broken tibia and fibula working on an indie show, which is, that's not the time that you want to break a leg, is right after you come out of contract. He has put up a GoFundMe, which is currently at a little over $41,000. So there is obviously a lot of support for Danhausen out in the world. You and I have talked off camera. We love the work of Danhausen. He really is an internet age wrestler, doing some hilarious work on YouTube. Also pointed out that he's got a very strong support on Patreon. So hopefully that will mean that he can, you know, get through this broken leg without too much problem. I've seen that he's got some bookings in February, so hopefully he should be good to go. Any thoughts on Danhausen before we move on there, Todd?
Very nice, very evil, very injured right now. But now, if you get a chance, check out his YouTube channel, because it's great. He does a lot of unboxing. And I swear to God, I don't think he actually buys any of this stuff. I think fans send him stuff to unbox.
Because he's so entertaining.
Yes. So he's, a very entertaining worker. I do, like I said, if you watch his YouTube blog, you'll fall in love with him because he's a great character.
So anyone who doesn't know Danhausen, we'll give you the quick rundown. He wears black and white, very evil looking face paint. But
if I can, I'll put up a photo of him too. So yeah, we can, if you're on YouTube, you can see it.
His whole thing is that he wants to become very famous to earn lots of money and buy a golden house and a rocket car. He does things like he brings teeth to the ring and pours them in an opponent's mouth to kick them out because they've already got teeth in their mouth, so he can't be disqualified for using teeth. And he does the tequila dance from Pee-wee's Big Adventure on the Apron. Very silly, lots of fun. Get well soon, Danhausen.
Yeah, I love when he got released, he thanked Dave Honor for hiring him.
Always talking about Dave Honor. That was fantastic. And you're not allowed to swear around Danhausen because they'll take you off the air.
That's right.
No swearing.
Because if he gets off the air, then he doesn't make the monies and he needs the monies.
That's right. What a character. What a great wrestling character. Anyway, before we get too stuck on talking about Danhausen, because I could do it all day, let's move on to That's Debatable.
Time to play. I forgot all about this.
That's Debatable is the segment where we come out and we have a debate about a topic in the wrestling world. We randomly decide who is going to get to take what side of the argument. We get 60 seconds each, and whoever makes the best argument wins. Not who's right, because that's decided by the flip of a coin, but whoever makes the best argument. So I believe last week, unfortunately for me, Toddy was the winner. Was a very close contest there with very, very strong arguments on both sides, I'll say. But congratulations, Todd. But that doesn't matter to me because we had no punishment this past week, so I don't have to watch Roads to the Top. So I'm fine with that.
I was thinking about this when I knew I'd won, because it wouldn't have been fun if I was going to lose and done this. There was a pay-per-view ages ago. I think it was called Superstars of Wrestling.
Okay.
I think maybe that...
Is this the one that got put on in Australia?
No, it's not.
No?
It's, if I can find it, it was one that was, it was so very good. You'll love it. I'll send it to you and you can do a report on it for the next show.
Okay, I think, you know, that sounds perfect. What we'll do is we'll each start coming up with some punishment of the worst possible wrestling-related media we can find and forcing the other person to watch.
Do you know what I do like, though? I like the fact that you're, like, in your real life, you're into education, and we're making everything like a book report as a punishment. That's right. Not punishment.
Fine, I'll get one of my year fives to write it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, that's a shock.
Make one of my year fives watch Roads to the Top. No, I don't think I can do that legally. Against the Geneva Convention or something.
You'll lose your green card for that, or blue card for that.
That's right. Anyway, let's talk about our debate for this week. We're asking, should WWE reunify the brands? Should the brand split be over? Raw and SmackDown rosters combined back into one. Once again, I'm flipping the coin, so I'll let you call it in the air. Heads or tails, Todd?
Heads.
It's tails. So I am going to go ahead and I'm going to take, what should I take? I'm going to take the side of, yes, WWE should reunify the brands. All right. I've got my timer ready here. So I've got 60 seconds to argue the fact, and then Todd will get to rebut. So I will start my time now. The brand split is not helping anyone. There is too much going on where WWE cannot align its talent. By having split rosters, you are limiting who can work with who. Whereas if you streamline into two rosters, you can just have whoever fight whoever. And with a roster the size of WWE's, if they want to keep losing people the way they are to save money, to make profit, they need to do that. They need to do it urgently. And honestly, casual fans will lose track of who is on what show at the moment. It is not benefiting them. It does not benefit the hardcore fans who want to see matchups that they can't see because of the brand split. And it doesn't benefit the wrestlers who are on one show where there's someone like Roman Reigns, so they can't get their shot there. Whereas on the other show, they could be a main event talent. I don't think the brand split helps. I think it needs to end. I think there's too many dream matches on the table that WWE is not putting on for absolutely no good reason. There's my time. All right. So, Todd, you've got the argument that the brand split needs to end. I think I gave you the softball here. Fire away now.
Hang on. So, I've got to argue that it's got to keep going, right? They keep the brand split the way they are.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, there's the way you worded it. Then I'm like, what?
No, that's what I said. I argued for 60 seconds and then thought you had to argue my point as well.
I know. I'm like, you said it. I'm like, okay, hang on. That's not the what?
Todd, we've recorded 2 weeks in a row. It's too much for my tiny little brain. Right.
Okay.
All right. Go for it. Your time starts now.
Okay. WWE should not reunify the brands, keep them separate, because what it does there, it creates the very thing that you said. What stops it? It creates dream matches. Because if, say, an AJ Styles is on one brand and a Roman Reigns is on another, and you want to see those two guys fight, you're going to see it later on down the track. Maybe when they merge for a WrestleMania, or if they do a draft where they swap guys over, then those dream matches can happen. That can build up anticipation. It also creates the fact that you have to watch on a Monday night if you're going to see the guy that you want to see. Or and if then say there's a couple of guys you want to see. You like a AJ Styles and you like a Kevin Steen or a Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens is only on Monday nights. AJ Styles is only on Friday nights. I'm going to have to watch both shows to be able to watch both guys. It's as simple as just creating that need to have to watch the both shows to see all the superstars you want. And if you want to do the whole thing where you do dream matches, then you have your shows like your Survivor Series, your WrestleManias, where you can build to invasions, big matches.
All right. So
pulled that out of my ass.
Yep. Very well done. I think what might have actually happened there is we might have each gone with the argument that we think less of, I think is what might have happened. But that's the challenge of a segment like that's debatable, because once again, we'll emphasize, you're voting on who had the more convincing argument, who did the better job of getting across the point, even if you disagree with their point. So go on to, yeah, sure, Todd, thanks. Go on to Wrestle Radio AU on Twitter, Wrestle Radio AU on Instagram, Wrestle Radio Australia on Facebook, and you can vote. You'll make the difference. You'll decide whether I have to watch this horrible Legends of Wrestling pay-per-view. and there's Road Dog.
Oh no, you've already got to watch it. You've got to watch it because of the last one.
I've got to watch it for this.
Don't try and get out of it.
No. All right. You'll send me a link, and then I'll come up with we'll come up with something horrible for if we win to force the other person to do. But moving on to another reason that you should be following us over on the social media. And look, there's Punk for you.
I'm just annoying you now.
Subliminal advertising for AEW, right, Todd? What are you doing? If you are over on the social medias, you can provide us with some listener questions or comments. And we had a great question from listener Ash Kania this week, who asked, out of all the releases in the past week, who was the ball dropped with the most and how would you have booked them? I'll let you fire away as someone with some booking experience, Todd. Who was the ball dropped with the most? How would you have booked them?
Well, I mean, I think it's a walk-up star that Keith Lee is the one that they dropped the ball with the most. The way I would have booked him is exactly the way they booked him towards the end, but I would have kept going with it, destroying guys left, right, and center until a babyface popped up to defend them. And it's as simple as that. It's not a hard equation to do when you've got a big guy like Keith Lee, especially one that can talk. If you want to make him a heel, then you do that sort of stuff where he comes out, destroys people, like handicap matches, he destroys two people. To the point where, like, one time maybe he goes over a little bit hard on, say, a Gran Metalik or a Lince Dorado, to the point where I further up the card, babyface comes out to stop it, and that sets the whole thing in motion. It's as simple as that. It's building a monster and then having that monster get slayed by a good guy. That's
all right.
Yeah.
Great answer. I've got an answer that I think will come a little bit out of left field here. I think Ember Moon. Ember Moon is absolutely phenomenal, has been for a long time. And if you go back and watch her ascent in NXT, it was one of the most exciting storylines I have ever watched in wrestling. And I think if I had to fix the booking on this, it's really simple. I would have rebooked the storyline that stuffed up in NXT because Asuka got injured. You do that exact same storyline, but you do it on Raw or SmackDown. You make Asuka an unkillable monster with the title who is so, so, so good that she starts to get overconfident and she starts to be mean and nasty. And then she starts to cheat to win a little bit. And then Ember comes up and Ember has the Eclipse, which is the deadliest move in wrestling. It is the ultimate finisher that no one can kick out of. And then we have three matches. Ember versus Asuka for the title. And the first one, Ember loses because she can't hit that Eclipse. Asuka just dodges it and she cheats to win and retains. Then we have a no contest where Ember manages to hit the Eclipse, but something happens, rolls out of the ring. It goes to count out. She can't capitalize. And then finally, Ember becomes women's champion by hitting that Eclipse, keeping the unbeatable Asuka down for three and taking the title. It's the storyline that they were building in NXT. They got 2/3 of the way through and then Asuka got injured and had to vacate the title and it got given to Ember. Because that storyline didn't have a payoff, do it again on the main roster, make Ember the absolute star that she should have been. That's what I would have done.
Look at you. The book and hat. Well done, mate.
Hey, I'm learning from the best.
Oh, well, can you send him my way? Because I need help.
All right, so big shout out to Ash Kinnear for that question over on Facebook. We had another comment from Michael Stieber, who I'll also just give a few highlights of what he said. Particularly sad about Keith Lee and Karrion Kross going. Loved them both in NXT. Excited to see what would happen with the move-ups and Kross's debuts on the big show as champion. The writing was on the wall with Kross's loss to Jeff Hardy, not to mention losing Scarlett, taking away a big part of the mystique. She really added something to his performances. Suddenly not having her was a loss, but expected. Keith Lee, we won't go into how they ruined his entrance when he moved up, but especially sad about this one. Could have been the big guy of big guys for a long time. They started to build him up, even booked him a win against Orton in a pay-per-view. That's a really good point that I forgot about. Then he had to take time off for some health issues, came back with an altered name, and they didn't do anything. He said, I'll miss Ember Moon as well, really enjoyed watching her work. All this, along with how WWE handled Banks versus Belair, left a sour taste in his mouth. He said, for the record, I don't mind the title being dropped to someone who never truly lost it. I thought Belair's run and build-up as champion deserved a lot better than being squashed in under 30 seconds. I agree with a lot of what Michael's come to say here. Absolutely spot on, mate. So with that, you know, please come over to the social medias. Tell us what you're thinking about how wrestling's going on at the moment, and we can speak to it. But it's time for the segment that we're named for, Chicken Salad, Chicken Shit. Todd, what have your chickens been doing this past week?
Which one are we going with first, mate? The chicken shit? Do we go chicken shit first and then go to chicken
salad? We like to start with the chicken shit and end positive. So give us what you hated.
Okay. What I hated is, it's funny because this one was a mixed bag because the start of the promo I loved, and that was the CM Punk promo on Dynamite this week. He started off talking about John Moxley, how, like, because we all know what Punk is straight edge, and the reasons why he's, if you know the reasons why he's straight edge, he's very much against drinking and the alcoholism and all that sort of gear. He did a really good job, like, praising John for going to get help and all of that stuff. But then when they moved into storyline, it just... I don't understand the logic in this argument at all. And if you didn't hear it, or maybe you did hear it and maybe you didn't pick it up, he basically said the reason why he didn't take the spot that John's spot in the tournament was because he wanted to talk to Eddie Kingston. So basically saying it's because of Eddie that you won't see me against Orange Cassidy and possibly won't see me against Bryan Danielson in the main, in the final for the tournament. And it's because I want to talk to Eddie Kingston. When has ever been having to talk to someone stop someone from being in a tournament? Especially when the guy that he wanted to talk to wasn't even there for that show. It was just, it made no sense to me at all.
It's dumb.
He didn't have to mention it at all. He could have just went off on why he wants to talk to Eddie Kingston. And that Eddie Kingston isn't there. He didn't have to bring up this whole tournament thing. To me, I didn't understand where they were going with it. If he was trying to go heel, if he was trying to blame Eddie Kingston to make him go heel, it made no real sense to me. And no one brought it up because I think everyone was so focused on the first half of that promo, which was great. And then the subsequent promo afterwards, which we'll talk about later, was great. It's just this bit made no sense whatsoever to me. Why would ever having to be... Say I had to talk to you, but there's also a tournament thing. I'm going to probably put off talking to you maybe till after the match and then go and do the damn match. If you wanted to turn Eddie Kingston heel, you have him in the match, then you have Eddie cost him the spot. But there was none of that. There was no real reason for doing it. No. I didn't understand it at all. And for that, that's why that got my chicken shit for this week.
Absolutely. So I've got a... chicken shit that's a little more, little less on shows and a little more online. One that I want to touch on quickly, which just made me mad, was hearing Ron Simmons talk about how the original name for the Tag Team Doom was going to be Ebony Express. Hate that. Just wanted to go on record as saying how bad that is and how glad I am that didn't happen.
Wasn't that another tag team's name, though?
It could have been. I just hate it a lot.
Sure. You keep talking, but I'm going to look it up. Yeah.
The thing I'm going to talk about is some online drama that happened, and I just think this was a chicken shit from all parties involved. So this is Samurai Del Sol, formerly known as Kalisto. Yep, Todd already knows what I'm talking about.
I nearly put it in our rundown, but I didn't.
I got so sick of hearing about this week. So he tweeted about how he prayed and talked to John, brackets Brody Lee, before his match. Thank you for showing me your home at AEW and giving me the strength and energy I needed for today. Forever in my heart. Forever you're in my heart, Hermano. This is getting tweeted before him and Aerostar from AAA made their debut on AEW. Chris Jericho responded to the tweet saying, you spelled his name wrong. And Amanda Huber, Brody Lee's wife, also got a tweet in there. And then there was some back and forth about apologies from Samurai because he was overwhelmed by emotion and blah, blah, blah. But this is the worst of wrestlers using social media, right? First of all, he spelled the dude's name J-O-H-N, which is how most people spell John. Brody Lee's name was spelled J-O-N. I don't think Chris Jericho needed to make the correction, especially because it's not the only spelling mistake in the tweet.
Mm.
Right? Dude's English is a second language. I get it that, you know, you don't like, and there was arguments about, oh, he was name dropping and he made a misspelling when he was name dropping and he shouldn't have been name dropping in the first place and blah, 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 blah. It's so indicative of the drama that gets made out of nothing in the wrestling world sometimes. It's, you know, we have a podcast and we've got so much to talk about. The fact that there's things like this that are happening that are almost making the podcast just make me angry because it's absolutely nothing. None of these tweets needed to happen and it just made me grumpy. So that's my chicken shit for the week.
Okay, now I looked it up and what go. I was thinking of is Ebony Experience, which was Harlem Heat's first tag team name.
That's rough. That's really rough.
That was Harlem Heat's first tag team name was the Ebony Experience.
Yikes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did they actually come out with the Colonel who had them with, like, chains?
I don't know if they had chains, but originally...
That was, like, the original plan.
Originally in WCW, they did come out with... I think they came out with him first, or no, they eventually did. They came out with Sherry. I know that, but it might have been him first.
But Sherry was later, yeah.
They were called Kane and Cole originally.
Bad.
That wasn't like Booker T, Stevie Ray. It was Kane and Cole originally. And then it got changed down the line.
Anytime these things come up, it just make me, you know, remember how shit some of the wrestling world is. Because this is only, you know, this is less than 30 years ago we're talking. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get out of the chicken shit. Let's clear our minds with a little bit of chicken salad. So I might take this one away because it is related to what you were saying earlier. There was a promo between Eddie Kingston and CM Punk on AEW. And man, oh man, you forget when you give Punk a little bit of that heel nature, just a touch, just enough to have him speak the truth that people don't want to hear. It makes electricity. And then you put Eddie Kingston, who I think is the best promo in the world at the moment, into that situation.
Eddie believes it. There's a difference. Eddie believes it. Punk's saying stuff because he knows he's going to get a reaction out of the crowd. Eddie believes everything he says.
I genuinely don't think Eddie has worked a promo in his life. He just says what he's thinking, and the dude is absolute dynamite. It is so good. This promo between Punk and Kingston, if you haven't watched it, AEW put it up on YouTube. Go watch it. I have had no interest in watching CM Punk matches for the past couple of months. None. And I want to watch this match because this promo was so good. It made me feel like they have beef. It made me want to know what's going to happen when they meet in the middle of the ring. Big pull apart brawl. You know, it had Kingston talking about how he felt like he wasn't getting respect from guys like Punk and Danielson and Homicide years ago, and Punk launching back with they didn't respect him. And then Kingston finishing off with, when I beat you, you go retire for 7 years again. Oh, magnificent stuff. Really, really good.
I definitely co-sign that. I also love what FTR are doing at the moment as well. Just the fact that, like, no one was talking about the AAA tag team titles. No one gave a shit about them. Like, you knew the Bucks had them, then they lost them to the Lucha Bros. The Lucha Bros never brought them out. Even when they weren't champions, they never brought them out. So they never really did anything with them. Like in the last 2-3 weeks that the FTR have had the titles, I've seen that titles more than I ever saw for the last 12 months when they've been owned by AEW talent. I mean, they're still owned by AEW talent, but I hadn't seen them until they ever come out to defend the titles. Or if they needed some sort of thing, like I think, didn't the Bucks defend it in a ladder match?
Yep.
Yeah. Did you ever see them wearing it before? You never saw them wearing it before. No. Just the fact that they're doing that. And my other one goes off the piggyback of something that you talked about, Samurai Del Sol. Now, when Samurai Del Sol got released, do you remember Superfan Izzy?
I do.
Her father made a joke
I know
about
exactly
it.
What you're going to talk about as well. Yeah.
And Samurai Del Sol said, that's cool. If you want to joke about it, I'll buy your parking pass. I'll buy your ticket. Come and see me in the show and we'll talk about it. To which then the father gave a very heartfelt apology. And Samurai didn't even let up. He took a photo of the parking pass. He took a photo of the ticket. He said, they're all here waiting for you. And then after the show, sent up, like, just sent a tweet, no showed. Boom. That's when, if you want to shoot back at someone, that's how you shoot back at them. Not the way Chris Jericho did.
I'm actually going to pick you up here really quickly, Todd. Was that Samurai Del Sol or was that Lince Dorado?
They were a mask. I don't know. It was one of them. I was sure it was Samurai. I could be wrong. It's
just in, all masked wrestlers are the same to Todd.
Well, they are. They're under a mask, mate.
Lince Dorado was making these tweets.
Was it Lince Dorado? Okay. Well, there we go.
I knew what you were going to talk about, and I knew you'd gotten the name wrong. That's why there was a little smile forming on my face.
Dude, I got bloody Hikaru Shido fucking confused with Riho for the last 3 weeks. What makes things any different?
All right, I'll throw in one more chicken salad on the way out. If you don't mind, Shingo Takagi versus Zack Sabre Jr. Banger.
Okay. I actually thought you were going to say chicken salad, Todd buying the AEW figures. I thought that's what was going to be up there for sure.
You didn't buy enough Brandy figures, Todd. Anyway. Yeah,
there's plenty in stock. I'll give you the hot tip.
That's
I bought the last at my local toy store. They had the AEW figures in stock, but they only had one-offs. So I thought, oh, I'll just buy them, because I quickly looked up on eBay, and eBay are charging like $60 a pop for these guys, and they're only like $40 at the toy store. So I thought, I'm just going to buy them, maybe put them up on eBay, make $20 a pop on these things.
Yeah.
So I bought like both the Bucks, Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. There was still four Brandies sitting on the shelf. And I dare say if I go back next week, there will be four Brandies sitting on the shelf.
Well, we'll see, Todd, because I'm thinking about maybe buying one of those and then having a bet on one of these that's debatables where the loser has to come out at a show with a Brandy figure. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, fuck. But that's not fair. That's not fair.
But anyway.
I will come out with it and I'll give it to a fan.
Yeah.
I'll get myself
a heel move. What a heel move.
That's okay, right.
That's enough us talking crap. We need to plug the pod. So that means that if you haven't already, make sure you're subscribed to Wrestle Radio Australia. It's free. You can do it on YouTube. You can do it on Apple Podcasts. You can do it on Spotify. You can do it on Stitcher. You can do it on Podcast Addict. You can do it on whatever podcast catcher you use to get your podcasts. Subscribe to Wrestle Radio Australia. You don't just get these episodes of Making Chicken Salad. You also get the wonderful main feed for Wrestle Radio Australia, which has some awesome interviews. I know last week I talked about how good that Istria interview is. This past week, it's been with Australian Wrestling Podcasting Royalty, Concrete Davidson, an absolutely fantastic chat there. So make sure you check that one out.
Thank you, sir.
If you're subscribing on Apple Podcasts, especially, please do us a big favor. Give us a rating and review. Makes a huge difference. Gets us into more ears. Means we can keep doing this. We can keep having fun with it. The socials, Wrestle Radio AU on Twitter, Wrestle Radio AU on Instagram, Wrestle Radio Australia on Facebook. If you're following us on Twitter, you can give Todd a follow at Beast Eastman and give me a follow at Lachlan Albert. That's right, I fixed it. So there's all of that going on. Please do keep in touch. Because I mentioned those socials, go on over there, ask questions, give us comments. We can put it on the show. What have you got to mention now, there, Todd?
Well, I thought about, we talked about this pre-show because I found something when I was cleaning my... touching on my very personal. I found something when I was cleaning my TV room up, and it's this, and it's so WrestleMania Steel Cage Challenge game, right? And all of this is, I think you put a couple of batteries in it, you plug it into the back of your TV, and it's like, it's the old Nintendo game, but it's got like Macho Man, Undertaker, Bret Hart, Razor Ramon, Warrior, Ted DiBiase, Piper, you can all play as. So what I'm thinking of is that when we put this show up, we put it up on all the thing, we put it up, and I think, because what I've got now is I've got a link tree for all of our things. So the link tree takes you to, you can go to YouTube, Spotify, Apple Pods, or our direct download at Libsyn. So if or when I put the thingy up for it, if anyone who shares it tags us in it, Wrestle Radio AU, at the start of either next week or the week after, whichever. How long do you want it to go for, mate? Do you want it to go for just till the next episode, or
let's do 2 weeks. Let's give a chance for us to replug it on the pod, give people a chance to enter just if they don't make it in time. So for the next 2 weeks, if you go over onto the social medias, share that link tree and tag Wrestle Radio Australia to go into the draw.
Yeah, so there you go. Untouched, because I don't know why, but the idiot I do know why, because I bought this, and then the week after I bought one of those arcade emulators.
Yep.
Which has this on it. So I was like, oh, well, I had no real reason to buy this. So it's never been opened. It's practically brand new.
Mint condition WrestleMania Steel Cage Challenge.
There you go. So don't say we don't give anything away here on the show. And Barb, no, I love you, but you're not going to win it.
Sorry, Barb.
There'll be
friend
a
of the show, Barb. Yeah. All right. So I've got nothing else. Todd, have you got anything else to mention?
That is it, mate. I haven't got an interview lined up yet this week for WRA, but I'm still working on it. And I talked to you a little bit about it off air. I've got another one, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks, which should be really fun.
Should be a fan. I'm kind of hanging out for it now that you've mentioned
it. Yeah, I'm hoping it works, but you never know. So I've learned to not get my hopes up anymore when it comes to interviewing people.
We'll see. So with that's been Todd Eastman. I'm Lachlan Albert. Until next time, have a good one.